Assessing our prayer life is often easier said than done. I'm Dr. Fred DeRuvo, and you're listening to Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
You know, I've been trying to honestly assess my prayer life, and I've come to some conclusions. When I pray, unfortunately, I often bring my list of requests, but I realize that I rarely end my prayers with the statement that Jesus made in the Garden of Gethsemane, noted in the book of Luke. Why is that? I believe it's for a couple of reasons. Selfishness, a little attempt to discern his actual will. Now, that may seem obvious, but I challenge you to be mindful of these two indicators the next time you seek the Lord in prayer. In fact, when you go into your prayer closet, determine first why you're there. Are you there to ask God to do something for you? Are you there to present a request that for some reason you think he may not be aware of? Or are you there to worship him first, determine his will second, and praise him for his provision third? You know, as I mentioned previously, often my prayers can seem to me to be simply matters of a perfunctory nature. I have needs, and I take them to him. I also mentioned that sometimes, maybe more often than not, I go to him with my own preconceived ideas of how I expect God to answer and respond to my requests, or at least how I want him to. I recall one instance way back in Bible college, probably 30 or so years ago. I had just begun my very first term at Philadelphia College of Bible, and I had a special grant from the government that allowed me to pay for my tuition and my books. Well, the trouble was, as I found out after purchasing some books, that I was supposed to buy all of my books at the same time so that there would be one total purchase per semester. Well, I didn't know that. And so I went to buy them, and when I bought some, I didn't buy the rest of my books, but I was told that I would have to pay cash for the additional books since I had already purchased books against my account previously. Well, you can imagine, I was nervous. I thought, what am I going to do now? I left the bookstore, and after making a quick trip to accounting, headed up to my room, where I literally got on my knees and asked God to provide a way. And as I prayed, I began to release the frustration and tension that had been caused by this new situation. In fact, I specifically recall saying to the Lord something along these lines: Lord, I really need to be able to purchase those additional books for my classes, but I don't have the money for it. If you could open the door for that to happen, I'd really appreciate it. Well, as I continued to pray, I experienced a change of outlook. I then prayed, Lord, if you don't want me to buy these additional books now, then that's fine. I'll use the books from the library to complete my studies until I can earn from my job to purchase my own books. Well, it was actually a very liberating situation. I knew what I wanted as I went into prayer. But on this particular occasion, I agreed with the Lord that maybe he didn't want to provide the additional money at this point. If so, then I also knew that he would provide a way for me to be able to use the necessary books for my classes. In either case, the way the Lord answered the prayer was completely up to him. Now, feeling completely at peace about the situation, I went down to the accounting office, where the folks in the bookstore had told me I should go to double check with them. I had been there earlier, and they told me to come back later that day after they had time to check things out. Well, I arrived at the accounting, and I stood in line about 10 people from the front. As I moved closer to the front, the lady behind the counter saw me and smiled and said, oh, you're fine. You can go purchase your books. And she gave me the necessary voucher for the bookstore. Well, as you can imagine, I was elated. But up until that point, I wasn't aware of how the Lord was going to respond. I really would have been fine either way. But of course, this was by far the easier way to go. Well, as I look over my life since that point, I realize that on too many occasions, I never give the Lord an option to respond to my prayers his way. I go before him, lay out my request, then leave, hoping, not necessarily expecting, that he's going to answer me according to my wishes. Can you imagine a slave going to the master and asking the master to do things his, the slave's way? That would be absurd. Normally, a slave in Roman times would go to the master and with the need and simply wait for the master to respond. The master would tell the slave how he, the slave, should do something or what he, the master, was going to do about the need. You know, as Christians, we do this with God, or maybe we don't. But really, the question is, do we do this with God? Do we simply go to him with our requests and give him little room to decide how he wants to respond? How do we do this? I recall many occasions where I left my prayer time not sure of what God would do, but really wanting to do it my way. How is that allowing God to be God? How is that making him Lord of my life? It's not, plain and simple. If I'm not willing to do what Jesus did, as he suffered emotionally and prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane, then I don't think I have any business going to the Lord in the first place, do you? I note that once Jesus finally released the entire upcoming and horrendous situation to the Father, he was finally at peace. Please note that in Jesus' account of the situation of the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus was emotionally rocked with pain, so much so that he began sweating drops of blood, as Luke describes for us. As he prayed and the upcoming cup would be removed from him, Jesus always finished with the words, "My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, your will be done." And we read that in Matthew 26, the second part of verse 42. Now, if Jesus did that, how much more should we do with every request we bring to God? We have no excuse, yet I've spent a good portion of my own prayer life dictating to God. Yes, dictating that he would do it my way. How tragic and even sinful is that? It's obviously fine to present our wants to God. Jesus did this in Gethsemane. However, he did not end it and mean it with, "Not mine, but yours will be done." Then I believe we are opening ourselves up to confusion, frustration, and possibly even sinful reactions to his will, because we're only prepared for his response if it coincides with our will. There's great importance in ending our prayers with, "But not mine, but your will be done." And the question is, do we do that? How often do we do that? And do we mean it? I notice that after Jesus won this battle through prayer in Gethsemane, he was ready to move forward. He came to the point of letting go his own wants in favor of the Father's, and because of that, he came to terms with it, and peace enveloped him. Quote, "Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand." Unquote. That's Matthew 26, 45 and 46. Now here we note that Jesus is fully in command. He's in charge, allowing himself to be arrested illegally and illegally tried by godless men. Can you imagine standing as judge of the God of the universe? This is what Jesus allowed because he knew it was the Father's will, and thank God for it. Because without it, we would have no chance to receive salvation. It would not even exist to be offered to us. As I look back over my life and all of my prayers that I can recall, I realize that too often I have not given God any room to act according to his will. And because of this, I have experienced frustration. I was expecting a different answer or a specific answer according to the way I had prayed, because the answer did not arrive as I expected it to arrive. This frustration created an attitude of sinfulness, and I regret that tremendously. However, God is so patient that he allowed those things to occur so that I would learn, hopefully, how he wanted me to pray. If we look at the Psalms, I don't see the type of requests and minutiae from David that often is included in my prayers. I see a large picture in the prayers from the mouth of David. Yes, there were times when he was greatly concerned for his own life, but even there, he normally ended his prayers with praise to the Lord. Whose life is it anyway? If, as I stated earlier, I am a citizen of heaven, because through salvation I've been transferred out of the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light, then where does my allegiance lie? Whom do I serve, myself or God? Obviously, it cannot be both. More than anything, I want to pray for his will and his alone. And that might not coincide with my own desires. I fully believe that the more I see and comprehend that my citizenship is actually not on this planet, the easier it will be to let go of the things that tend to bind me to this earth. You know, the world is speeding toward the apocalypse, and too many Christians are praying only about their own concerns. We're too busy worrying about how the Lord is going to do this or that, and hopefully he will do it according to the way we pray. We are way too concerned about having far more than we need, and we believe the additional is also what we need. I want to be a man after God's own heart. I want to end each prayer and mean it with, "Not my will, but yours be done." I want him to show me where he's leading me, not where I'm trying to lead him. How can I call him Lord and have it any other way? Didn't Jesus say the very same thing? In Luke 6:46, he asks, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and you do not do what I say?" It's an excellent question, isn't it? If God has given us things to do, then shouldn't we be spending more time in prayer asking him to make his path clear? I've noted all the times I literally begged God to do something according to my will, only to end up thoroughly frustrated. I was looking for the wrong thing, and it was never coming. Now, a few years ago, my sister went to be with the Lord. She's home. She's happy. She's healthy, and most importantly, she is worshiping Jesus face to face. Is there anything better than that? Well, during the week just prior to her death, she was in the hospital in a coma, and you can imagine how I prayed. I ceaselessly asked God to restore her to health. All day long and into the night, I reminded him of my request, and this went on for 3 days. Finally, on the fourth day, I wanted to begin asking him to restore my sister to health, but the words wouldn't come. Oh, I could have said them, but they would have meant absolutely nothing. The Lord graciously and patiently let me storm the gates of heaven with my selfish, yet understandable, request to raise my sister back to health. Finally, he broke through, and the sense I got was that it was simply not his will. That was final. He was not angry that I had prayed the way I did, but not once had I prayed for his will to be done where my sister was concerned. Not once. Finally, I just stopped. And then I said, "Lord, you know all things. You not only know what is best for my sister, but you have your will, and your will has been predetermined here. If it is such that you will be taking my sister home, then so be it, Lord. Your will is perfect and reigns supreme. I thank you for it." Well, as you can imagine, that was a very difficult prayer to pray because it meant that I was acknowledging my sister was going to die and I would not see her again until I died. However, I felt that it was okay to continue to pray as I did. I asked the Lord to grant one request if it was his will. And my one request was that my sister would open her eyes so that we could connect, so that I could say goodbye. Ever since she had entered the hospital, before I arrived, she had been in a coma, and I found out later that she had flatlined twice with the paramedics before they were able to get her to the hospital. Well, the day I went to the hospital, after lunch, my brother-in-law, nephew, and I stood in my sister's room. And there she was, the same as always, machines doing her breathing, no real brain activity. The nurse was also there, and as I watched, she lifted up each of my sister's eyelids and shone a flashlight into her eyes, which were looking straight down into the bottom of her lids. Her pupil did not dilate. There was no movement at all. I asked what that meant, duh, and the nurse told me, "Well, she has no brain activity." She left, and we prayed, and as we prayed, I glanced up and gently lifted one of my sister's eyelids. At that point, she was actually looking right at me. I released it and then continued praying. Well, I looked up again, and this time, without having touched her eyes, both of her eyelids were fluttering, and they had both opened wide. Now she stared directly at me. I knew we had made contact. Later that evening, we received a call from the hospital, and we were told, quote, "something had changed," unquote. When we arrived, my sister had gone on to glory, where she blissfully lives now. Well, I still cried like a baby, but God was so gracious in answering my prayer, a prayer he did not have to answer, about allowing us to connect. I am endeavoring to pray only for his will, and I have a lot of requests that seem to go ignored. And I think it's largely because, as James says, I have been asking amiss. He says, "You ask and you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives so that you may spend it on your pleasures." James 4:3. Yep, that's me. How about you? Well, that's our show for today. I thank you for joining me, and may God bless you tremendously.
Demons in Disguise, Nephilim Nightmare, Politics, Islam, and the End Times, Interpreting the Bible Literally, The Pre-Trib Rapture. These are just some of the books written by Dr. Fred DeRuvo, host of Study Grow Know on AM 950 K-High. Whether it's the Tribulation, the Rapture, Politics, Islam, or the End Times itself, Dr. Fred DeRuvo offers his conservative and biblical perspective on these and other subjects. Look for his books on Amazon.com or at StudyGrowKnow.com.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.